รักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรักด้วยใจร้อนโอ้ยรักร้อนมันร้อนไม่หยุดพักเมื่อร้อนรักสมรักจึงหายร้อนร้อนรักรักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรักวี่รักร้อนมันร้อนไม่หยุดพักเมื่อร้อนรักสมรักจึงหายร้อนร้อนรักรักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรักร้อนรักรักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรักร้อนรักรักร้อนต้องวอนเรียกรัก
Here's a Chinese song that sounds like it's about cats. We'll be here in a second. Whoops!
快来吃饭，快来吃饭，黑着胖儿里有鱼一条，喵喵，嘻嘻嘻嘻，小小姐儿，喵呜喵呜喵呜喵，小黑猫，小黑猫，吃饭吃完了，吃完了，洗洗脸，脚抓抓。
Not too much more of the, wow, I can't even hear myself. There we go. Not too much more of the cat here. Let me get rid of that. Let me plug in Josh here.
Did you hear that?
All right. Oh, good. We've got people on the, I installed that chat, the chat window here on the right side of the, and down near the bottom of the page, the Writing Misterioso page. So.
Yeah, I really actually that's kind of a cool feature because you can just like check in and say something like, you know, Kilroy was here and
yeah.
Move on. Here I was worried about being late.
Oh, no, you should never be worried about being late on this show because it always starts late. So what okay. We're doing today is another weird music show because the last one worked out so well. So I found some that... I haven't played before for the most part. I even found that I had excerpts from the John Waters film Female Trouble, which is my favorite.
Excellent.
Yeah. I found a recording by Carl Douglas who did the song Kung Fu Fighting, and nobody knows him doing any other songs. I didn't know he did any other songs. But
yeah, I didn't either.
So it turns out I had one of his songs. Rod McEwen.
This is going to be great.
Rod McEwen singing I Dig Her Wig, stuff like that. Go ahead.
Well, hopefully we don't still end up sounding like Statler and Waldorf for the rest of the night. Huh?
Right? Who? What? What are you saying?
I said it was short. Yeah.
Is that working?
Yeah, so I didn't mean to make you scramble for goofy tunes in the middle of the week. I didn't mean to.
I don't have
didn't
to scramble
mean to.
Hey, who? What?
Here we go.
Get your hands up.
Here we go. Don't this. Move.
Don't reach for them guns.
Yes. Take it easy, you galoots. Put away the hardware and relax.
It's Greg.
Getting something. I forgot what I forgot.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso?
Yeah, well, now, of course, I'm trying to find the, let me turn that down, the list you sent me, which I sent from one email to another to try and, you still there? Tonight is another weird music show, as if you didn't hear at the beginning of the show, and my guest is Joshua Cutchin, musician and famous author of A Trojan Feast, and soon to be a major motion picture, and another book, too, coming out soon.
Soon to be a major motion picture starring Rod Steiger.
let's see. What does that smell?
What do I want to choose? Because, you know, we had tapped a lot of my weird music reserves in the first show, so I had to dig a little bit deeper. And you know what? Let's kick it off with a nice little spaceman theme here from Fireball XL5.
Do you know
the intro?
Yeah, go ahead.
But I was just gonna say it's the intro and I think the closing song as well. So,
oh, okay. Well, let me find that. God, everything is so slow on here now. I wonder what's going on.
What were you gonna say? Did I know what?
Did you know that they play that on? The other night I was working Coast to Coast and they played the damn thing on Coast to Coast.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's in their library. It's one of their songs that they play like an intro outro.
As bumper music sort of thing?
Yeah, it's bumper music, yeah.
Nice.
Fireball XL5 is bumper music on Coast to Coast.
I think they're supposed to be making a feature film of it at some point.
Really? Is everybody going to move like puppets?
That would be so great.
Yeah.
Just mocap the whole thing.
Yeah.
Meant to ask, have you had a chance to talk about Albuquerque on Radio Mysterios yet? Or
no, I didn't talk about it.
Do you want to talk about it, Greg?
Sure. Yeah, you know why I want to talk about it? Because I want to see if I can get your email back here while I talk about it. As they say, ask me anything.
Oh, sorry.
About Albuquerque.
The last I had heard, you had to sort of think on your feet, and you think that went pretty well?
I didn't have to think on my feet. What it was, well, I had to think on my feet when I got there because I had not used my computer with the way that was set up. And luckily, I'm a vague techno geek, so I sat there for about 20 minutes before the talk, and I was like 45 minutes early just to make sure. But I sat there for about 20 right. minutes before the talk, making sure that what's it called? I can't think of words anymore. PowerPoint.
The PowerPoint computer and your brain are both malfunctioning. Yes.
So I would have had to make sure that the PowerPoint was feeding properly through the video. I got it working. No, I didn't really have to think on my feet. What it was that I had not given this talk before. It was right. it was a brand new talk. It was basically the co-creation talk. And I started out with a few wonderful bits of UFO porno basically to talk to the 65 average age 65-year-old audience that, you know, one, I was on their side because I'm interested in this stuff and I'm not here just to make everything sound like you people are stupid and you don't know how, you know, I'm not that way at all. And the second one was, who doesn't like UFO porno? So the point of,
right, exactly.
Yeah, the point of telling them about the UFO porno was to show that there are things that are reported that are much weirder than people can even imagine. And on the other hand, not the other hand, and furthermore, that if you don't have a background in what you're supposed to think, if you know what I mean. If you're supposed to think or have the background that it's aliens coming from other planets in spaceships, and they look like guys with big bulbous heads, and they ram things up your butt and then lead you back to your bed with scuffed shoes or whatever, that's probably around the theme that you're going to, you know, you're going to have if this happens to you. So one of the first examples I brought up was the Emsilin abduction from 1978 in Poland by who knows what they were, but this guy was, he had never seen a TV. He had never watched a movie. He did not read about the stuff in the newspapers. He had no idea what was going on, and he saw these two little guys that were green, about 3.5 feet tall, with feet that look like diving flippers, like flipper feet.
I love accounts like that so much.
And they were standing next to the road while he's driving by in his horse-drawn cart, because that's how he lived out there. And they jumped on the cart for a ride. And he didn't think anything of it. He was just kind of like, well, okay, you know, we're supposed to give people rides around here.
look out for hop-ons.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Not walk-ins, but hop-ons. So they yeah. they go for a little while. They get to a clearing. And hovering in the clearing is this thing. It looks basically like a big, dull silver bus or refrigerator. It's square. It's a rectangle or whatever. You know, it looks like a box. And at each corner, it's got these things revolving very quickly, vertically, that look like drills. What? What? And they take him to get on the ship or whatever it is, and he steps on a platform that is then cranked up to the door of the ship, like on these cables or ropes. Not a beam, and when he gets inside, he looks at the door, and it's not one of those like, well, the door disappeared in the wall and you couldn't see it anymore. He said the door looked like a rolled up carpet next to the opening, like they could unroll it and close the door.
It's analog UFO yeah. technology. It's the Model T. It's the Model T of UFOs. Yeah.
I guess. And they had him take off all his clothes. They looked at him, but they didn't do anything to him. They ran something over his body. And then they said, okay, you put your clothes back on. They looked at his belt. They thought that was real interesting. And then he looked at the door as he was before he left. He said there were 5 or 6 dead or nearly dead crows flopping around on the floor of the thing next to the door of the ship. What?
That's
what are those doing there?
So wild.
He bows to them. They bow back. He gets on the little platform and goes tick 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 back down onto the ground. And he rides back to takes the cart back, tells his family, and they come out to look. And all that's left is a bunch of little print marks in the soil. I mean, in the grass of like those big flipper feet and a bunch of bird feathers.
I love it. I love it so much.
So the point, and Burnt State Robert pointed this out to me as a completely unbackgrounded, naive, what do you want to call it, an untouched witness who does not have any conscious way of knowing what he's supposed to be seeing. So this extremely weird crap happens to him. I've never heard of anything else like that going on with anybody. And the thing is that there are other accounts that are so strange and so weird and weirder than that, and nobody ever pays attention to them. I told them all to go to Albert Rosales' humanoid site, and everybody started writing it down. They really wanted to. I said, I know you all like the porno. Go to the humanoid site. You can stay on that for hours.
And see how weird things can get. I mean,
yeah, exactly. And you, at some point, you could probably say, well, you know, that's probably just people making stuff up. And it's like, yeah, but some of it isn't. Some of it is stuff that people said actually happened. They said, this happened to me. They're not making it up. They're not sure if they dreamed it or not. Probably not. Full waking consciousness. Just like any other, you know, fairly reputable UFO or occupant or whatever sighting. And they're just, they don't make any sense at all. They're way off the map and they don't follow the script, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
We don't want them following the script.
I've often felt like we tend to overestimate the number of hoaxers and charlatans in this field in terms of people who are making claims. Like I think that most of the time when there is something that isn't genuinely anomalous, it's usually just a misidentification. But I think a lot more people are earnest than we like to give credit for.
Yeah, I would think so too.
I really do.
I mean, I think they're earnest. I don't know what happened to them. I don't know if it was a dream, if it was a fugue state, if it was an actual contact with something that wasn't human, if it was some natural thing that screwed up their brain. I do not know. But the thing is that, yeah, as you know, it's all over the map. And I wanted to point that out to people before I went into my thing about perception and how the human mind deals with input, how we deal with memories, how we deal with cognition. I brought up Donald Hoffman, the guy that says that we don't see things as they are. We see things as evolutionary expedient for us to survive, which is not what is actually there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went into the argument. Somebody said, well, why don't you jump in front of a train then and see how real that is? And he said,
yeah, exactly.
It's not. He said, I'm not saying it's an illusion. I'm saying what we see, he's saying, what we see is what is expedient for us for what we need at the time, whether we're hungry, whether we're in danger, whether, you know, we're looking to mate or whatever the hell it is. That is whatever is, you know, most expedient to helping you find that goal or achieve that goal will be what you cue on. And you don't cue on anything else that's going on in your area at that time. So what he's saying is that if you jump in front of the train will hit you and it'll kill you probably, because the train is a really good analog for what is actually going on, whatever that might be. Oh, I know what he said. Think of a computer desktop. Now you've got a file on there that you've put a ton of work into, and it's on your desktop. So you drag it around or you open it or whatever. That file is not the it's representing what the file is. It isn't the file. But if you destroy it, you've just gotten rid of all of your work and everything. So it's very important that you recognize that that file represents all your work. And in the same way,
it's sort of a very I was just going to say it's sort of a variation on the whole the map is not the territory kind of idea.
Yes.
In a way, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And that whole thing about like jump in front of a train is such a typical materialist, reductionist, pithy thing to say, you know?
Yes, it is. But I'm glad he made the point in his talk because he said, you know, that train is a representation of something that can really harm me. It doesn't matter whether it actually is the train or what I'm seeing or whatever it is. I am seeing what keeps me from getting hurt by getting out of its way. And that's just an example. You know, it's like, well, a train is probably a train because people built it and we all know what trains are and all that. But, you know, I said, extrapolate that out to a UFO encounter, a close encounter of 500 feet or less. We have no way of knowing what the hell that is because none of us have encountered that before. So what the hell is going on in our brains when that happens? What happens at that point? What happens in the first few milliseconds? What happens in the first, you know, few moments after it's over? And what happens in the next few days and weeks as you're telling other people and yourself and all that? It's changing and changing, and you don't even know it. So that was my point. It's like, if we're that far extrapolated from what the original source is, what the hell is happening when people have these encounters? I don't know. What are they encountering? That's a big question. And I think that's something that people have to look at rather than, you know, what planet are they coming from or when are they going to disclose whatever. I mean, the most important thing is, what the hell are people seeing when they see something?
Nice. Well, now how did the crowd seem to... Did they seem receptive to this, or were there a lot of people going, well, what do you mean they're not aliens? Like, wanting to start back at square one? Wait, what do you mean they're not aliens? Was there a lot of...
No, because the funny thing is I messaged Red Pill, right, like about 10 minutes before, and I said, oh no, they're all like 60 or 70 years old. They're going to hate it. They're going to hate it. And he said, don't worry about it. You know, it's something you would say to a friend to, you know, try and make them feel better. And so what I did was I decided my attitude was going to be, I'm going to explain everything very carefully, even though I read the talk. I mean, I had to read it because it was the first time I gave it. I will go off script many times, as much as I need to, assure people that I am on their side, and I'm not trying to say, I'm not one of those people saying this is all BS, because I don't think so. Explain everything very carefully. Stop every once in a while and say, is everybody cool with this? Does it make sense? We're doing a thought experiment here. I want to see if, you know, if you're on board with me. And everybody's nodding their heads and fairly on with it. And the other thing I thought before I did the talk was, I'm going to have the most happy, positive attitude while I do it as possible. Not a pleading attitude, not a teaching attitude, not a, you know, complaining, not a, you people are so dumb, you're not going to understand, or, you know. I assume they were going to be very happy and friendly with me, and I think that was a big part of it, too.
You know, I think a lot of social interactions tend to benefit from that sort of line of thinking. You know,
yeah,
let's approach this in a positive spirit of exploration. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I also think that I have an interview with Woody Allen from the mid '60s, and the guy says, "What can a man do to, you know, to be funny, to be a good comedian?" And it's like, and Allen was thinking he was trying to be nice, and he said. People don't care about the stupid joke. I mean, they do. They want to get the joke and all that. He says what they want is a familiarity with the person, a rapport with them. They want to like them. They want to feel at ease with them and think that they know them a little bit. And then they're more receptive. So every time I go to talk to people now, I think of that quote. If people like you personally, if you're a personable person, whatever, if you tend to be pleasant and outgoing and, you know, and seem to be open and not trying to hide anything and not trying to be sneaky or I'm dumber than you or I'm smarter than you, anything like that. Look, we're all discovering this together. Let's see what the hell's going on here. Here's a gentle suggestion or two or three. And I think that helps. And afterwards, people came up to me, and one guy said, "Great talk, I really loved it." He slipped me some money, which was nice. They said people can give me free will love offerings if they want. So a guy gave me $20 and said he loved the talk.
Cosmic love offer. Yes. Cosmic love offering.
A couple other people said, "Didn't agree with everything you said, kind of strange, but you know what? Totally fascinating. I'd love to look into it more, and I'm going to study up on it." And I said, "I am so happy you said that, because one, it means you were listening and I got through to you, and two, it means you don't agree with everything I say, because I don't want you to. If you agreed with everything I said, I might be worried."
Exactly.
So yeah, positive, exactly. A lot of laughter, like, yeah. And, yeah, made sure everybody was backgrounded properly and just said, "Look, consider this." Not, you know, ufology sucks and they're not doing the right thing and no, not an attack, sort of a, here's a suggestion. This could be exciting. Let's look at this in a slightly different way, maybe. And people were cool with that. So that's how it went.
Well, as my mom always said, you can get more flies with honey than you can with vinegar.
Exactly. Now, I didn't want to go in there with vinegar and piss and vinegar. Nobody likes the smell of piss or vinegar. So,
I kind of like the smell of vinegar, actually.
I don't. I don't like hot sauces with vinegar. I tend not to like them, which is almost all hot sauces, so it's kind of a weird one.
Yeah, if you ever want to see a bag of salt and vinegar potato chips disappear, put them in front of me.
I do like salt and vinegar potato chips. I do like those. Let me go back to the site here and see if anybody's saying anything. Oh, so we're starting with Fireball XL5. It's Fireball XL5 start and theme song. Is that it?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay, so let me make sure this is running, and we will be back in, what is it, 2 minutes and 29 seconds.
Excellent.
Okay, Venus?
Okay, Steve.
Right. Let's go.
it's a theme song.
I wish I was a spaceman, the fastest guy alive. I'd fly you round the universe in Fireball XL5. Way out in space together, conquers of the sky. My heart would be a fireball, a fireball. Every time I gazed into your starry eyes, we'd take the path to Jupiter, and maybe very soon we'd cruise along the Milky Way and land upon the moon. To a wonderland of stardust, we'll zoom our way to Mars. My heart would be a fireball, a fireball.
Yeah, yes, the famous Fireball XL5 theme. I don't know who composed it. One of the shows by the famous creative Jerry Anderson, who also did, I think, now I can't think of the name of the show. Anyway, any space show from the 1960s with puppets in it was probably Jerry Anderson.
Was it Thunderbirds?
Yes, that's it, Thunderbirds, yeah. That's right. I was a huge fan of Thunderbirds. I had a Thunderbirds model. It was one of the first models I put together.
Really? Of the Thunderbird?
The big one that had all the things, like the mothership thing, that had all the stuff inside it. Yeah, I guess I saw it on some sort. I did not see the original, I'm not that old, but I saw it on reruns, like in the late 70s or something like that, or the early 70s, something like that. And I somehow had from Japan a Japanese model of the Thunderbirds ship.
That's magnificent. That's awesome. Is awesome.
Yes, it was many a playtime was spent with that Thunderbird ship. And
so it was a model that you actually assembled, or?
Yeah, I had to glue it together. I mean, I was like, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 or something like that. I glued the thing together. I remember it falling apart a couple times. I had to re-glue it. And I had all the little decals I put on it were all fucked up a little bit because I couldn't slide it in the right place when they were wet.
I never had the patience for those. I could never. And then I'm just hard on accessories and technology and anything else in my life. Everything I touch tends to fall apart. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's where I learned, you know, besides my dad teach me, it's kind of where I learned it. The boy male thing of putting things together and building things, which is, it's been important to me. I still like making and building and fixing things. It's, I went the other day, you know, the guy, Mr. Fab, Music for Maniacs guy.
Yeah.
I've had him on my show. He said, do you do handyman work? I said, yeah. I went over and fixed an air conditioner with him the other day, and he paid me a little bit.
That's amazing. That's amazing. My brother-in-law is really good at stuff like that. He built an entire shed in the backyard just from scratch, and it's so nice. It's got this nice green metal roof, and look at them, like, you know, they're smart, and then there's that kind of like applied smart, which I have zero reference for. I'm worthless.
And that's fine because you have a wonderful talent that makes people happy. Besides writing books, the wonderful tuba. I won't make you play the tuba this time.
Thanks. It's kind of been a hell of a weekend. I had a recorded Where Did the Road Go on Friday. Had
I saw
an early morning gig on Saturday. And then I talked with Rogan on Project Archivist last night.
Yeah.
And then tonight, and then today we went house hunting, and then tonight I'm here. So thank you for not making me play the tuba.
No, you don't have to play the tuba. Let's see.
Yeah, hit me.
You, okay, let's see. What's Day of Decision? I have no idea what that is. I do know what Eve of My Multiplication is. Do you remember... And I've played it before, the history repeats itself thing about the Kennedy and Lincoln assassinations and how similar they were.
Yes, and in terms of the people in the cabinet and how all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, the guy that did that, whose name I can't remember now. God, who was that? Buddy Starcher, I think was his name. He had a whole album of different things about the, you know, of... middle to slightly later aged guy wisdom and politics and stuff like that. And one of these I discovered I had, because I have the whole album. I think I might have gotten it from Music for Maniacs, maybe. But I think it's a very weird and roundabout way of this guy trying to explain to his kid about the birds and the bees. And he doesn't even get into it, really. And the name of the, the name of the piece is Eve of My Multiplication.
Okay.
And it's so, like, it doesn't even get near the subject, but you realize, I think that's what he's talking about. Yeah, anyway, this Eve of My Multiplication by Buddy Starcher, like I said, made famous by the History Repeats Itself thing that came out after the Kennedy assassination. Here it is.
On the eve of my multiplication, I tried to look back to an eve about 26 years ago. I saw another man on the eve of his multiplication. I wondered if he looked back, because early the next morning, there I was. And early tomorrow morning, there you'll be. And someday on the eve of your multiplication, you'll look back, and you'll look back on days filled with sunshine, days filled with sorrow, days filled with love. Sometimes you'll wonder if there'll be a tomorrow. You'll see books and toys, odd jobs, other girls and boys, and sometimes you'll hate me. Then sometimes you'll love me. Then someday you'll love as I have. And before you realize it, as my father and his father and his father and his father before him realize that you are on the eve of your multiplication.
Yeah, all it needs is some people in the background going, ho, hum, but
yeah. Yeah, it's like, I love this idea. This is my idea of the narrative is this really manly cowboy is having a really hard time explaining the birds and the bees to his kid.
Yes, exactly.
He's sitting on there and he's fumbling for words. The eve of my multiplication. So, which raises the question, what is the morning of my division?
God. It is, so that I, you have Fireball Ball XL5. I counter with Eve of My Multiplication by Buddy Starcher. So what do you want to play next?
That's a hard act to follow. okay, it's time for the big guns. how about Chewie the Rookie Wookie?
Okay.
So this is from an album that came out right at an LP that came out right after Star Wars. It came out in 1977 by a band called The Rebel Force Band, and the album was called Living in These Star Wars. And if you, it's the most awful stuff.
The cover looks like, awful.
Oh yeah, it's awful. There's like the Ballad of Obi-Wan and songs like Don't Fall in Love with an Android.
Oh,
and
a respirator for Darth Vader.
Yeah. And each of them have their own, like, a respirator with Darth Vader sounds like Superstition by Stevie Wonder with like, it's like, oh, over it. You've got to take the time to listen to the whole album because it is a riot. But one of the worst ones is Chewie the Rookie Wookie, most notably awful for its Chewbacca sound effect, which you'll notice about halfway through.
Okay, well, so here's Chewie the Rookie Wookie by the Rebel Force Band from the album Living in These Star Wars. We'll be right back.
stopping on every downbeat.
Was that the chewy sound? The guy going, ah!
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like a guy gargling seltzer while hitting a vibra slap. Yeah.
I mean, like one of those, what's it called? A donkey's jawbone or whatever that thing is?
Is that the thing that goes?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think in classical music you end up calling it a vibra slap, although it does sort of like a donkey's jawbone.
Well, the thing is, I looked up vibra slap or whatever that thing it was the other day just to see what it was. I was looking up strange instruments on Amazon, even though I wasn't going to buy any. Because I looked up, you know, they had, you know, amplified kazoos and railroad whistles and all that. But one of them was the... the vibra slap, and it apparently used to be called the donkey's jawbone or something like that. And
it sounds like a sounds like a WWE move, the donkey's jawbone.
It does. What it was is they used to actually take the jawbone of a donkey with the teeth still in it, and you hit it, and the thing it was just a curved piece of bone, the jawbone, and it would vibrate, and the teeth would rattle in it.
That is nuts. I had never heard that origin story. That's crazy.
Yeah, and you can find videos online of people actually with a donkey's jawbone and showing how it worked. The vibra slap works much better, which is probably why that was invented.
Yeah, and it's also a much more pleasant sounding name.
Yeah, the jawbone basically sounds like a jawbone with teeth in it. It sounds like something that somebody'd be playing in an old Betty Boop cartoon about Halloween, you know.
So. Yeah, it does. I want to write a script, a Western movie script, where the protagonist goes into this old prospector's music shop, and he's like, "I got donkey jawbones and Jew's harps." And
yeah, well, he says all the, you know, I got the railroad whistle, and I got the Jew's harp, and then we got a tambourine, and we got a donkey's jawbone. And everybody's like, what? What was that last one?
Oh, man.
I don't know where this next one came from, but it's an ad for Bell Central, South Bell Central, for Let Your Fingers Do the Walking, sometime in the 60s. And it sounds like, I mean, it's... it was from a compilation of things where people were ripping off styles. It sounds like Ella Fitzgerald doing a ad for the phone company.
And great.
I don't think it was Ella Fitzgerald because the voice would be better, but here it is. South Central Bell's ad, Let Your Fingers Do the Walking.
Reduce tension.
That That's the whole thing. It was like, what, 30 seconds?
Signed, sealed, delivered.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm yours. Yeah. Yeah.
There, I took my very short turn. What does Josh counter with? Does he counter with the donkey's jawbone move?
Yeah, I don't know what to counter with. Jeez. My problem is, like, a lot of the stuff that I picked is kind of long, but we'll see here.
That's okay. I've got other ones that are much longer than one I just... I've got one called Before the White Man Came, which is good.
Do you want to do a twofer, since that was a 15-second one?
Okay. Okay, Before the White Man Came was done by a group called the Corallons, or Corallones, led by a guy named Marlon Wallace. Marlon Wallace recorded the song... Abominable Snow Creature. That's how I knew about him. I was like, wow. And Mr. Fab got in touch with Marlon Wallace and got him to send him more of his music. He sent him a whole double album of music.
Holy cow. And Marlon Wallace of Abominable Snowman fame.
Yeah, Abominable Snow Creature.
Abominable Snow Creature. I've never heard that either.
Oh, do you want to hear Abominable? It'll be a threefer, though.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
Okay, let me see if I can find. I want to see if I have. I don't know if I actually have it on my.
Greg, you're not following your rules.
Bylaw
5736 clearly states every participant must take equal turns.
I think Aaron Golias, I think, posted that fanboy comment saying, "How does Chewbacca thermoregulate?" We've been through 5 different directors, and nobody's ever explained that, which has ruined the experience for me for Star Wars. I mean, I should have said, how does he thermoregulate?
That's amazing.
What did he say? He has no sweat glands. He's got hair on his hands. He can't sweat. He doesn't pant like a dog. How does he thermoregulate?
You know what the sad thing is that... There's somebody has probably asked that question. There's probably an official Lucasfilm answer.
They got somebody sitting there answering every stupid question like that comes in.
Well, they actually have a guy who is.
That'd be a great job, you know. Well, it could be mind-blowingly, amazingly, like insanity-inducing, though.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, but they have hired guys in the past whose only job is to like manage continuity, and it was sort of a bigger deal before Disney bought Star Wars and pushed the reset button on all the expanded universe stuff. But
there was
a guy who would get questions like that, and it was his job to answer. His name was Pablo Hidalgo. And I think he's still doing it. Yeah, it sort of sounds a bit like bring me the head of Pablo Hidalgo.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Here's Abominable Snow Creature by Marlon Wallace, and then we'll play Before the White Man Came.
Fantastic.
I've also got another very strange white person Indian song, which I will play after your turn. Anyway, here's Abominable Snow Creature. This is for Josh, who has not heard it before, I don't think.
Away up high in the wind and cold of the Himalayan snows, there's a creature there I can't forget, no matter where I go. I was a mountain climber many years ago, and there wasn't a place I wouldn't go. But when I saw that strange creature in the snow, it made my blood run cold. Abominable snow creature. Snow,
oh.
Abominable snow creature, you'll haunt me wherever I go. It stood upright like a giant man, and it had a long white mane. It had red eyes and pointed ears, and great long sharp fangs. I was heading up towards a mountain peak when I saw it coming my way. I grabbed a rope and I started to go. Then I felt that mountain sway. He hit me hard with a fist of steel, and I went a-rolling in the snow. And I didn't stop till I hit a rock 1,000 feet below. Abominable snow creature, hiding in
snow.
Oh,
abominable snow creature, you'll haunt me wherever I go.
Now I'll never climb another mountain, and I'm gonna watch where I go, 'cause I'll never know when I'm gonna meet that strange creature of the snow. Away up high on a windy ridge where a mountain goat wouldn't go, I saw that strange creature in the snow, that strange creature in the snow.
Abominable snow creature, hiding in the snow. Abominable snow creature, you'll haunt me wherever I go.
Okay, now, it's the Corillians is the name of its band. Here's Before the White Man Came. Starts just like you think.
Before the white man came, this land was wild and untamed. From the mountains to the sea, in the valleys and the plains, and the rivers ran clean, and the forest stayed green, before the white man came. Before the white man came. Before the white man came, this land was wild and untamed. From the buffaloes on the plain to the raven wolf's sharp fangs, and the grizzly bear was king, and the Indians rule supreme. But it's never been the same since the day the white man came. Before the white man came, this land was wild and untamed.
Man, that gentleman has a knack for fitting the most cumbersome lyrics.
Yep.
In the valleys and the plains.
Yep.
And the river.
Oh man, although I have to say Abominable Snow Creature might be my favorite.
Stayed green.
I gotta make that into a ringtone.
Before the white man came. Before the white man came. Before the white man came, this land was wild and untamed. And the law of the jungle always reigned in the mountains, valleys, and plains. And the medicine man healed the pain, and the Indian maidens danced and sang. But it's never been the same since the day the white man came. Before the white man came, this land was wild and untamed. From the mountains to the sea, in the valleys and the plains, and the rivers ran clean, and the forest stayed green.
When was this?
Before the white man came. Before
after?
The white man came.
There we go. Before the White Man Came by Marlon Wallace and the Corillians. And before that... Huh?
So it's not the Corillians, not the Carillions.
No, not another Star Wars reference.
Yeah.
And before that, Abominable Snow Creature, which I have played on the show before, but I wanted you to get a proper introduction to Marlon Wallace. And so there you go, Before the White Man Came. I didn't even listen to the whole song. I listened to the first, 20 seconds. I said, that's what I'm playing.
Yeah, that's magnificent. That is magnificent.
So, Josh's turn.
Okay, so I don't think this one's quite as explicit as the Dirty Blues that we had last time.
Yeah, you know, you had to make me change every single show now is explicit for Radio Misterioso, even though the swearing is confined to probably about 5 shows.
Oh, no, I feel so bad now.
Yeah, but the thing is, since there is swearing on the other shows, if somebody complains to iTunes, they'll kick it off.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and apparently, a lot of people in India are very concerned about clean podcasts. They want to know very, very explicitly if the thing is explicit beforehand so they don't get exposed to swearing and sex and stuff. India.
That's really interesting.
Yes. Anyway, no, it's no problem. It's like, what am I going to do, cut down on my audience because they all say explicit? If anything, it'll improve the audience numbers.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So this is from a wonderful compilation that came on the market a couple of years ago called Son of Rogues Gallery, which is a bunch of modern musicians doing sea shanties.
Oh, okay. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, it's great. And this is called Asshole Rules the Navy. And it's Iggy Pop, singing about it, and it's great. It's actually become, whenever the Cutchins go out on their inaugural trip onto the lake every summer, I have to turn this up on the radio, so we all sing the chorus together.
Oh wow!
My 66-year-old parents singing this, driving on their pontoon.
Excellent. Okay, so here's Asshole Rules the Navy, as interpreted by Iggy Pop. Here it comes. I should load it. Here we go.
Let us sing a bit of good old Captain Kit, who sat one morning early in the head. A bee came flying past, and it stung him on the ass. And this is what the gallant captain said. Asshole rules the Navy. Asshole rules the sea. If you want a bit of bum, better get it from your chum. You'll get no ass from me. Now we'll hear some rhymes of Yeoman Second Grimes, who ran the hook that hoisted up the mail. One day as he stood watch, it caught him in the crotch, and he cried as he went flying o'er the rail. It doesn't matter, for asshole rules the Navy. Asshole rules the sea. If you want a bit of bum, better get it from your chum. You'll get no ass from me.
So catchy, so catchy.
And now to end my song, I'll sing of A.B. Long, whose member was not like his name at all. When asked if he would tell how he got along so well, his answer simply was, as I recall, it's very simple.
Everybody.
For asshole's the Navy. Asshole's the sea. If you want a bit of bum, better get it from your chum. You'll get no ass from me. If you want a bit of bum, better get it from your chum. You'll get no ass from me.
I don't want your wrinkled old ass, Iggy.
Yeah, that's been around the block.
That's a nice word for what's happened to it.
Yeah.
Do you want to take two at a time, or do you want to switch back? What would you like to do?
Yeah, we can do two. Let's get some. You know, you can't do this without some tuba action in here. So let's do So Uptown.
Oh, okay. That's the MP3. MP3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing particularly humorous about this. Just some incredibly badass tuba playing by Matt Perrine of New Orleans, Louisiana.
You got to be on your game in New Orleans if you're going to play tuba, any brass, any instrument.
That's true. That's true. So this is a three-man group, guitar, washboard, and tuba called the Tin Men.
All right, here's So Uptown by the Tin Men.
So long, boys, if you want to find me, I'll be downtown. Ain't no percentage hang around up here anymore. She got a trunk like a tree, she treats me so mean, she's my mean Doreen. kicks and kicks runs through my heart like a matador. Ooh, oh, my baby, she's so uptown. She puts the stuff on her face. She just got in the brace with the big stoop, big stoop. She looked at the ground, heard the same sounds as the other girls. She liked the boys in the band. She liked to hold their hand down on State Street, State Street. Just when she was blooming, they kicked her in the Newman with the Jerry Curl. Uh-huh. My baby, she's so uptown. My baby, she's so uptown. My baby, she's so uptown. She's hung around with a nightborn gang, hanging out with that city mob, but deep down, baby, she's so uptown. My baby's got me riding the bus. My only thing's about the two of us. Down there at the Bluebird, face down in the wave.
Don't understand half the lyrics.
I wonder why she can't come by me. I'm down in charges with my family. Looking for a reason why can't she come around. The only thing I found is deep down. But baby, she's so uptown. Drinking cough syrup down at A-Dam, A-Dam. A little situation, living at the station like a fairy tale. Now she's back on my hands. I love to watch her dance by the jukebox, jukebox. She's my piece of the sky. Loves to see me cry in my ginger ale. My baby, she's so uptown. My baby, she's so uptown. My baby, she's so uptown. She run around with the Ninth Ward gang, hanging out with the fat city mob, but deep down, my baby, she's so uptown. 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 My baby is so uptown. My baby is so uptown. My baby is so uptown. Baby, she's so uptown. My baby.
I don't know why it does that. So Uptown by the Tin Men?
By the Tin Men, yeah.
Ah, excellent. God, that tuba was amazing. The guy must be dizzy by the end of the song.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite players down there. He does a great job. He also plays with the all trombone brass band Bonorama, which is great. They do like. I thought about bringing out one of their tunes too, because they do Zeppelin covers and they play like Frankenstein and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. You have to, I think, especially with a name like what'd you say, Bonorama. Bonorama. Yeah, perfect. Let's see. I've got two S&M themed songs.
Hey, sign me up for that.
One is called, this first one, it's from a, God, I don't even know what it's from or where I got it from. It's called Tortura. And it basically is just an instrumental with the sound of some woman getting hit or somebody getting hit and a woman saying, ah, ah, the whole time.
Oh, man.
And then after that, I've got something from a Halloween-themed album called The Whip, but has nothing to do with Halloween. It sounds like a gay man that's being tortured by a Russian spy, female Russian spy. So
I'm glad that my wife's asleep and my parents aren't listening.
Yeah. So here's Tortura with no actual – I don't even think there's a credit for the artist, if you want to call it that, but not too long of a track, and then we'll hear The Whip, two S&M themed songs here on Radio Mysterioso with Josh Cutchin as our guest. A bouncy little jazzy song too with it.
I really bring out the best in you, don't I?
Always, always.
I just want to have a party and have that, and just have that come on and not acknowledge it at all. See what everybody does.
Okay, here's,
yeah, one more.
This is The Whip from an album with a composer listed, but not the credits. It's Milton DeLug, who I think wrote music for movies, including Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, if I'm not mistaken. So here's The Whip. It's another S&M type song, a completely different one though. Here we go.
That's smart, doesn't it?
Now, will you confess?
Oh, you're such a brute!
Now, will you talk?
A little lower and to the left, please. Oh, by George, I think she's got it. Oh, I demand that you get the embassy on the phone immediately. I intend to report this whole incident. Oh! The most unpatriotic thing I have ever heard of.
Give me the formula, you insipid fool.
Oh, I wonder what Alec Guinness would do in a spot like this. I'll talk.
Give me the formula.
All right. It's 2 scoops of vanilla, 1/2 a banana, a dash of chocolate with just a smidgen of plutonium, sprinkled with pecans, and top with a cherry. Ooh. Ow. Ah. Oh! 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 Oh!
There you go, the whip.
I think that the siren and the phone call actually accent the whole scenario, because it's like he can't be bothered to answer those things. Because
there's the phone again. I'm not going to answer the phone. This is not a phone-in show. Anyway, your turn.
Okay, so so being a connoisseur of Spaceman songs, have you heard this Jimmy Buffett Gonzo song?
No, I listened to part of it when you sent it to me, and I said, okay, that's one that's going to be played.
Okay, yeah, so let's do it. So this is from the late 90s album Kermit Unpigged, which is basically the Muppets collaborating with a variety of music stars, and this is supposedly they're in a studio, and Gonzo and Rizzo the Rat walk in on Jimmy Buffett, and he sings Mr. Spaceman, and yeah, it's fun times.
Okay, let me see if I got it queued up right, because it's the entire album. I had to make sure to queue it up like 20 minutes in.
Oh, yeah. I think that maybe the link that I sent you has the timestamp.
It does. That's how I found it, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So, oh, yeah, they even actually put a link on the timestamp. So here we go. Spaceman with Jimmy Buffet.
Hey, look, Gonzo, Jimmy's Buffet. Let's eat.
Oh,
yes,
no, that says Jimmy Buffet. He's recording in there.
Oh.
Come on, let's go say hello.
No, thanks. I saw a sign down the hall that said meatloaf.
Well, I'm going to go see Jimmy. Hey, Jimmy.
Gonzo.
Hey, you don't look so good.
I had the most amazing night last night.
What happened?
Woke up this morning with light in my eye.
Uh-huh.
Then realized still dark outside.
Wow.
It was a light coming down from the sky.
Oh, cool.
I don't know who or why.
I know what you mean. Must be those strangers that come every night, whose saucer-shaped lights put people uptight. Leave blue-green footprints that glow in the dark. I hope they get home all right.
Take me along, I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride? Woke up this morning, I was feeling quite weird.
Me too.
And flies in my ear, and my toothpaste was smeared.
I know what you mean.
Opened my window, they'd written my name.
Yep.
He said, so long, we'll see you again. Won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride?
Hey, you two!
What do you want, Rizzo?
You won't believe this, but there's a spaceship outside.
Oh, yeah, I knew they'd come back for me.
What?
Come on, boys, let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
No way, I'm not going up in that thing.
Oh, Rizzo.
Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong.
Not me.
Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride? Won't you please take me along for a ride?
Gonzo, are you ready to go?
Sure.
Gonzo, you can't leave. You gotta be here for the end of the album.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, see you later, guys. I'm spacebound.
Have a nice flight.
Yeah, see you in the tabloids.
So, yeah, that's... yeah, so you put that one in your collection.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I like it better than the original, actually.
Yeah, I think I do too. It's a poorly guarded secret that in my younger days I was quite the Jimmy Buffett aficionado.
Oh,
and I'll still stand by some of his like 90s work, because he had like a 15 person band that was just killing it.
Uh-huh.
So that's a relic from my past.
Do you? I noticed that you had in this group of songs you sent me something from the Luray Cavern stalagpipe organ.
Yeah, so I want to make sure we got to that because, but you know, I had to sort of find the right pacing because it's not humorous or really. I mean, it's weird, but it's, you know, it's very beautiful.
Yeah, I have played these some of this. I have that album, the Monty Maxwell album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's so good. I could listen to it going to sleep. It's so soothing, and I love the drips and everything that are still in there. People have no idea what we're talking about, probably.
You know why? Because I made a pilgrimage there a couple years ago.
Really?
I said I had heard that record, or I'd heard some obscure music site posted an old tape of Leland Sprinkle, the guy that actually invented, you know, bought the property in the 1930s or 40s or whatever, and went in the cave and actually built the stalagpipe organ by making little electronically actuated hammers that would hit stalactites, and they rang with a certain tone. And if he didn't get the right tone, he took a belt sander to it.
Yeah, that's in a lot of ways, that's what I love about this, is because, don't get me wrong, like, I'm the first person to be critical of people who, like, will rub stalactites and stalagmites, and because when you do that, the oils from your hands prevent them from growing, and I think that's sort of disrespectful. But what I do love about this particular instrument is that it was born out of this manifest destiny attitude. Really kind of, you know, this idea that, like, we'll just sand it down until it's the right pitch.
Yeah.
Something you couldn't do that today at all. And
No, you could never do that. And if you was your own, on your own property and you did it, you'd get death threats like the guy with that killed the lion the mom with the gorilla.
Yeah. So at the same time, like, it really seems like, you know, it's even though it's built out of destruction, it's still a great gift to the world that this thing exists, because I think it's beautiful, and it's haunting, and it's just really cool.
Yeah, I went on the tour, and I took, and a friend of mine told me to do this. I took what he told me to do was, they will go and push this button, and the button has it is something that actuates the little electronic striker things, and it will play songs. And there's not somebody actually sitting at the keyboard, because he hooked up a keyboard to these things. That's the second thing about it. He went to the trouble of hooking up a keyboard, running a cable down there, running cables to all these little electric rubber mallets. And was able to figure out how to use a keyboard with all the tones and all the notes in there and play music on it. So I went on the tour, and the guy said, a friend of mine went, and he said, here's what you do. Because when you're there trying to listen to it, there's kids screaming and talking, and they won't shut up. What you do is you wait till they get like a couple hundred feet away from you to the next place they stop. You push the button again, and then you can have a private show. And I brought a I brought a little digital recorder, and I recorded it. So what I wanted to do, the reason I mentioned it, is because I wanted to play first. There's a couple minutes of the girl that gave us the tour talking about Luray Caverns. I didn't even realize I had this recording till today.
That's so cool.
And then we'll play your Midnight in the Caverns, the Monty Maxwell, for Elise. And then I actually have A Mighty Fortress Is Our Lord, and the thing isn't working too well, so like it's missing like a third of the notes. So it's beautiful and it's broken, which is great. So first, tell me if you you can probably hear it. You've heard the other ones. This is the woman that with the Eastern, like, Virginia accent, I guess, sort of maybe slightly Southern accent, that took us on the tour, like the first couple minutes of it, and then we'll play your song and then my little recording. Does that sound cool?
That sounds great.
Okay, so here's the Luray tour.
But when they made their way into the cavern, eventually sliding down the hillside to enter right here. Now, as you look back in the front of the room, you will see that very first rock formation they named after our nation's first president, George Washington. It is now our Washington Column. Now, the course takes about 1 hour, and it will be 1.25 miles walk. The only rules we have to follow on tour today that are very important to follow. We do have to stay together at all times. Our light system will be on an automatic timer, so that light will be turning off behind our tour group. Also, I do like everyone to stay in front of me as I talk, behind me as we walk, because that light timer may be off in front of us as well, and I may have to turn on lights as we go throughout the cavern.
The thing was, when she, you would have to actually find out where she had the timer. It was like a little little dial you turned, and it would time the light. So when she left, I went back and turned the light back on so I could see what I was doing.
That's great.
Yeah. Anyway, that's enough of her talking about the caverns. Here's Midnight in the Cavern. They fixed the stalagmite organ so that Monty Maxwell could play this wonderful version of Fur Elise. This is what the stalagmite organ sounds like, and you'd see why Josh and I worship it. There's the drips. That is some amazing stuff.
Yeah, I find it really almost haunting.
Yeah. Yeah, the first time I heard it was on a very like old cassette somebody had transcribed and made an MP3 of and put up online.
Yeah, it's Yeah, and I love the way that all the drops are still included.
Yeah. I don't think they can do it. I've got this feeling that they probably mix those in later. Because you can hear them when you're there, but they don't seem as... or maybe it was just a particularly wet year. I don't know.
Well, I think it sort of depends on what they're doing the recording from. Like, are they doing the recording from... I mean...
They've probably got 5 or 6 different microphones because the things are spread out a long way yeah. through the cave.
Yeah, exactly. So I wonder if there just happen to be some drops that are dropping right really near those mics or what.
Maybe so. You know what? They also I'll play this Mighty Fortress as Our Lord that I recorded, but they also told me that people do weddings there.
That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, and immediately Sigrid and I said, oh, we missed out. Oh, we should have gotten married here. Yeah, they're like, you know, 300 feet underground. There's this nice big floor they've built, this nice brick floor or tile or something, a beautiful floor in this one area. And the organ is sitting there right at the one side of the cave with all these lights on it. And it's got a little, you know, commemorative plaque and everything. Anyway, I will tell you, when I was recording this, I was crying. Mm. I was so happy to be standing there in the cavern by just with Sigrid. For a private showing, a private performance of the automatic, as Steve said, player piano tape version of the Mighty Stalagpipe organ. The only problem was that it wasn't working too well. This is what it sounded like. There's a kid screaming. I hit the button. The other thing, you can hear the things hitting.
Yeah.
Missing like a third of the notes. It's great.
Yeah.
It's me moving the microphone, sorry.
No, it's fine.
Stumbles its way through. You can yeah. sort of recognize that it's a Mighty Fortress is Our Lord. That's just the one they happen to have playing that day. And it was the fact that it wasn't perfect made me even happier.
Yeah, because it's like the reason that nobody likes overly polished pop tunes.
Yeah, I guess so. And I didn't notice because if some parts of it weren't working or the person that originally played it when they recorded it was just didn't know what they were doing. I don't know. But, it's amazing. You know, you can see little... If you look at if you stand near some of them, you can see the things actually hitting the stalactites. And the other thing is, if you stand close enough, you can see little blue flashes of electricity as the thing gets the signal to hit. So
that's really cool. I think I've been, but it was so long ago that I can't... Can't
yeah,
remember.
Well, you're from the east, so it was a little closer for you. We flew into D.C., and then we had to drive for, like 4 hours or something through the Shenandoah Valley to get there.
That was a legitimate pilgrimage. Like, there's no easy way to get there for y'all. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I was like, okay, we're going there. We got to go to the Luray Caverns. There's just no way around it. And Sigrid said, yep, you're right. We have to go. So... This is another reason why we're married. Anyway, I don't who's we can go over if we want. Whose turn is it? Probably yours. What do you want to play next?
How about Peace Pipe?
Okay.
So this is from a group that a friend of mine, actually I think he's playing on this album, playing tuba. But it was a group, it was this really eclectic group in New York City, that it was sort of like a, instead of a concept album, it was like a stage presence, like Ziggy Stardust sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the idea the group is actually called the Ronaldo the Ensemble.
Yes.
Because the backstory to the group supposedly is that he used to be called Ronaldo the Great, but he had that honorific removed, so he's now Ronaldo the.
Yeah.
But it's just a kind of zany, eclectic, wild, weird sort of, yeah, you just have to hear it.
Okay.
It's its own thing, that's for sure.
Peace Pipe by the Ronaldo the Ensemble. Hey, it starts out like sing, sing, sing.
Just stop and pass that peace pipe, bury that hatchet like the Choctaw, Chickasaw, Chattahoochee, Hootie, Chippewa, do. If you're feeling mad as a wet hen, mad as you can possibly get, then pass that peace pipe, bury that tomahawk like those Cheechy Mac, Cherokee, Chipotle, Mac, too. Don't be cranky, try to use a little restraint. Fold that hanky and wipe off all that war paint. And if you find yourself in a fury, be your own judge and your own jury. Pass that peace pipe, bury that hatchet like the Choctaw, Chickasaw, Chattahoochee, Hootie, Chippewa, do. Ashamed of me. The Indians said that I was wife by law. The white man always called me Indian squaw.
A quote of Cherokee, this is the jazz standard. Chickadee, Chippewa, Chickapee, too. Pull your ears.
clears in. Try to use a little control. When all clears in, you're a top man on the totem pole. So if you wanna be an alright guy, not a long face blues in the night guy, write that apology and dispatch it. When you crawl, it's grand to patch it. Pass that piece by bear that hatchet like the Trump Dog Chickens on Chan, who did you want? And the Chichi Mac chair, get you pulled to back, and the Chicken Meat Chuck Chan Chicken Bee, Cho Cho Chan, Go Chan, Ricky Chicken Rose.
Tour de force. Still there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange one.
I would put them in the same section in the store with squirrel nut zippers, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. I see that overlap.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. They're willing to go a little bit farther afield than squirrel nut ever has been.
Yes, definitely. I did see the squirrel nut zippers twice, so that I was lucky to at least see that. Since we went back to the Indian theme, I had this other strange American Indian, Native American, white people singing about, not sure if it's it's PC or not. It's probably so far off the map of being PC or not that it doesn't matter anymore. And I don't even know what it was recorded. It's called "What Is an Indian," recorded by somebody named Dal Williams. Apparently, it looks like it might have been in the 60s. And it sounds very much like another thing that's that I have called "What Is a Fisteris?" I've never played. No, I have played it, and it sounds like they sort of drank from the same well, but completely different themes. And they're both very surreal, so I love them. So I'll play these two, and then it's back to you. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds great.
Okay, Dal Williams with "What Is an Indian?" Sounds like it already, huh?
Somewhere between the innocence of Hiawatha and the savagery of Geronimo, we find a romantic figure called an Indian. Indians come in feathers, blankets, war paint, and B-movies. And they all have the same code. Peer from behind rocks, stand silhouetted on hilltops, and hang around in front of cigar stores. Prairie dogs put up with them. Buffaloes couldn't stand them. Cowboys and soldiers took shots at them. General Custer got awful sick of them. And Cleveland doesn't seem to care much one way or another. Indians like Winchesters, wampum, shortcuts, Pontiacs, going barefoot, cookouts, sky blue waters, and dead cowboys. They don't seem to care too much for live cowboys, walking, pale face who speak with split tongue, other Indians, pipe organ music, the U.S. Cavalry, and General Custer in particular. Nobody but an Indian could pile onto one horse 8 blankets, 10 buffalo hides, a rifle, a tomahawk, teepee poles, a gross of souvenirs, a makeup kit, an Apache hibachi, a smoke signal code book, a box of targets, himself, an autographed picture of Johnny Appleseed, and the complete works of James Fenimore Cooper. The westward push shoved the Indian out of the way, but even when he lost, he won. They ran him onto a desolate, dang reservation in the middle of nowhere. And when they looked again, he was up to his quiver in oil. You could run him off the range, but you couldn't run him out of your heart. He was a red-skinned, chicken-feathered, cowboy-chasing bundle of energy. And you always knew that sometime, when you least expected it, you'd make your way back to camp after a hard day in the saddle, and he'd be there waiting for you with a tomahawk to jump on you and throw his arms around your neck and whisper in your ear, "Hi, Dad."
What is a Fisteris? Well, Fisterises are everywhere and come in all shapes and sizes. Big as a Grendel, tiny as a Sussman, and sometimes just middle-sized, like Premises Maybelline on the Tees. You find them on race rundles just before the sun goes down, or on the wayside in the rain when the single thingle makes its rounds. In crowded wrinkle turns in the wee hours of the morning, when no one feels very energetic and the man at the piano plays songs you haven't heard since Septumulence. Hysteris is like pretty girls named Ingeborg with silver shoopers in their hair and banjo strings, moonlight gallops of the off and on. Yeah, they laugh a lot and send funny picture postcards in the Gelfening and play canasta with the Rodenstocks when the weather's bad. And sometimes Pasteruses are sad and sit and mope about the Limrocks and the Snurds they loved and lost, or cry big teedle-doodles and sob until you'd think their hearts would break into a million tiny grevices. Pasteruses dislike Alpenstoms with yellow teeth who step on people's feet in crowded subways and old wet newspapers with pictures of the winning thirtle blurred, and artichokes for breakfast when the Bumbleburger's gone. Hysterises are laughter when the Rimron's slightly off the Zelf, and tears when Shiring Bendel's sad and comes around no more. And music to your ears trencing dwindled down so you hear the dialings dropping one by one. Well, cynical people and those who've lost their faith in things they never see may curl their lips and call Pasteruses a useless lot and hardly worth a mentioning. But me, well, gee, when I go home at night feeling low and beat out and out of sorts with life and reach for my pipe and slip out of my shoes and unscrew my little wooden head, I don't know, I hear a little sound and I know my own Pasteris is there. I lean over in my easy chair and pat its little thermothrottle and my Pasteris snarls back at me. Well, sometimes I forget that, of course, they hardly ever talk. And I say to my Pasteris, I'll get off when into shit, so you never see nurse because shooting in this is selfie. Well, now you know how I feel about Pasteris. But if you're confused, it's your own fault, you know. Because,
oh, that's amazing. That might be the greatest thing I've ever heard.
I thought you might like that. It's I don't know what that inhabits. Some kind of strange not quite beatnik, off the beaten path 1950s deal. I don't know who did that. Oh, I might. Anyway, your turn. If I find out who it is, I'll put it in the post when I put this show up.
that was great. It's almost it makes me wonder, you know, was 'twas Brillig and the Slithy Toves.
Yeah. Exactly.
Let's see.
Great tradition of nonsense neologisms, which they aren't even neologisms, they're just gibberish, so it's great.
How about Walk This Way?
Yes. I like that one. I was going to suggest it.
Oh, had you heard it before?
I had not heard it before, okay. But it was one of the favorite things that you sent.
This is by a hillbilly cover band called Hazy Dixie, that takes various rock tunes and hillbillies them up. They do other ones from this great album are, I mean, they do some originals too, but other great covers. I think they do She's My Best Friend's Girl. And my angel is a centerfold from the. It's a great album.
Perfect.
But this is Hazy Dixie doing "Walk This Way," which is a much filthier song than I think anybody realizes.
Yes.
And this, their enunciation of the lyrics really helps you realize it. In this particular version. So let's give that a listen.
All right, Hazy Dixie with "Walk This Way."
Lover, always hiding under the covers to talk to your daddy. He say you ain't seen nothing till you're down on the muffin, and you're sure to be changing your way. I met a cheerleader, was a real young bleeder. All the times I could reminisce, 'cause the best things of loving with her sister and her cousin only started with a little kiss like this. Saw swinging with the boys in the school and your feet flying up in the air. Sing your head diddy diddy with your kitty in the middle and you swing like you didn't care.
So I took a big chance at the high school dance with a missy who was ready to play. It wasn't me she was fooling, cause she knew what she was doing when she told me how to walk this way. She told me to walk this way, walk this way, walk this way, walk this way. She told me to walk this way, walk this way. She told me to walk this way, walk this way. Just give me a kiss.
It's really well done too, which is part of yeah.
I like this. Skill girl sweetie with a classic kind of sassy little skirt climbing way up her knee. And there was three young ladies in the school gym locker when I noticed they was looking at me. I was a high school loser, never made it with a lady till the boys told me something I missed. And then my next door neighbor with a daughter had a favor, gave me just a little kiss like this. Seesaw swinging with the boys in the school and your feet flying up in the air. Sing your eight diddle diddle with your kitty in the middle and you swing like you didn't care. So I took a big chance at the high school dance with a missy who was ready to play. It wasn't me she was fooling, cause she knew what she was doing when she told me how to walk this way. She told me to walk this way, walk this way, walk this way, walk this way. She told me to walk this way, walk this way. She said walk this way, walk this way. Just give me a kiss. All like this.
Needed was a donkey's jawbone.
Yep, exactly. Okay, since we're two in a row, what would you like next? I think we got started like 10 minutes late, so maybe we'll go to another, 15, 20 minutes? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. So this is what we're ending the evening on, huh?
Probably. Well, okay. I don't know. I mean, you got one more, then okay. I have two, which is probably somewhere in the region of 5 to 6 minutes, so you will get the last word.
Let's do. Well, keeping with vaguely. So this is a more bizarre track. I'm not really sure if it's funny or not. My family has been a big fan of Texas singer songwriters for a while, and this is a track by Robert Earl Keen called "Gravitational Forces," and it's sort of vaguely spaceman related.
Yes,
it's sort of a spoken word track.
Yeah, I listened to probably about three quarters of it today, and it was fascinating. So here we go.
It's okay.
Gravitational Forces by Robert Earl Keen.
Yeah.
Gravitational Forces. The time is 8:45, 15 minutes shy. Completing a 4-hour sound check. It usually takes an hour and a half. room reminds me of a putt-putt golf course. A 20-foot crimson alien stands in the corner. An Airstream flying saucer juts out of the wall. Plastic asteroids the size of oil drums rain down from the ceiling. Someone pointed out they look like giant turds. We are here to play music. Music I have a relentless passion for. We are hurling through space at 66,000 miles an hour. We have traveled over 247,500 miles since we arrived here at 5. Maybe this is the wrong galaxy. Maybe we have broken a time barrier and time is slowed by the gravitational forces of two fellow spacemen. Two fellow spacemen who were on this planet when we arrived, who have no passion for music or anything else in this tasteless solar system, or anything else in this tasteless solar system.
Gravitational Forces by Robert Earl Keen.
Yeah, it's a nice little tone poem, as it were.
Yes, it's meditational. Okay, I told you I had that Carl Douglas track, but since we just played something with sort of a UFO theme, I've got a country UFO song that I don't think I played before because I just discovered that I had it this afternoon in huge amounts of downloads that I've done over the last, you know, few months. It's like, that looks good. So I download, and then I check it out later. And this one came up, Monty Johnson with Flying Saucers in the Air.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a little normal, but it's just strange enough that I like it.
Perfect.
Flying saucers flying through the air. Flying saucers flying everywhere. I tell you folks, they're not a joke. Things are here for fair. I know now what they mean by flying saucers in the air. I tried so hard to figure out where they were coming from. I know I'm not an Einstein, and yet I'm not so dumb. When about that time another one came flying down the hall, I knew then that the missus was the answer to it all. Flying saucers flying through the air. Flying saucers flying everywhere. I tell you boys, they're not a joke. Things are here for fair. I know now what they mean by flying saucers in the air. She said, now listen here, young man, better change your ways. Take out home where you belong, fight this nightlife craze. For some night one may hit you, you better say a prayer. You'll know then what they mean by flying saucers in the air. Flying saucers flying through the air. Flying saucers flying everywhere. I'll tell you boys, they're not a joke. Things are here for fair. I know now what they mean by flying saucers in the air.
Yeah, you can tell he was listening to... Who did Mr. Spaceman originally?
Yeah, yeah. The progression starts off that way, and then it takes a little bit of a turn. But yeah, it's definitely got that same vibe to it. That's great.
Yeah, it's a cute little one that I found recently that I can add to the list, which is up to about between 80 and 90 right now of different UFO songs, not including stupid things like, you know, what's the one everybody comes up with? It's like, oh, yeah, Space Oddity, or what's the other one that everybody always has? I don't remember now, but all the normal ones, they really turn me off. I can find these extremely strange ones where people, not by famous musicians that have many hits and everybody knows about, unless they're very strange.
Yeah, like the one-off novelty song sort of thing.
Yes, exactly. Those are the ones that really turn me on, and I've probably got 80 or 90 of them now. At some point, I think I will. I do have the domain name locked up, flyingsaucermusic.com, but I've never done anything with it, so maybe I should.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I'm sure most of the stuff you could post however you want to, and you would have zero problems with copyright infringement because nobody knows who it belongs to.
No, they don't know, and they don't care. And the people that do find out are probably just happy to get the exposure if they're still alive. I've got one other that I can play on my turn. So, do you want to hear Carl? What's the word? Carl Kung Fu Fighting Douglas or Rod McEwen's song "I Dig Her Wig"?
Oh, man, I have to go with "I Dig Her Wig." With a title like that, I got to find out what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't go wrong with that title. So here's Rod McEwen, "I Dig Her Wig."
I lost my heart to a girl so fair. When I saw her standing there, eyes as blue as summer skies and moonlight on her golden hair. I dig her wig. It's really great.
It's really great.
Each curl's in place when we embrace, and that's why I dig her wig. When we play hooky and cut school, or throw a splash in the pool, and though my baby gets all wet, her hairdo's not upset.
No curlers.
I dig her wig.
He digs her wig.
It's really great.
It's really great.
When we walk home, she needs no comb. That's why I dig her wig. Every night we've kissed and kissed, had a ball, we did a twist. Still my baby is a must, and daddy's never fuss.
No hairpins.
I dig her wig.
He digs her wig.
It's really great.
It's really great.
Each girl's in place when we embrace, and that's why I dig her wig. Sometimes she's blonde, sometimes brunette, or is she a redhead? I forget. A great invention is the curl that pasted on my girl.
No dandruff.
I dig her wig.
He digs her wig.
It's really great.
It's really great.
When we walk home, she needs no comb. That's why I dig her wig. No curlers,
wow.
No hairpins,
wow.
No dandruff,
wow.
No ribbons, no fooling. I dig her wig.
He digs her wig.
It's really great.
It's really great.
Each curl's in place when we embrace, and that's why I dig her wig.
What do you dig?
Her wig.
Wow.
That is magnificent.
Yeah, I dig her wig. I dig her.
It's really great.
No dandruff. Yeah, no curlers.
No hairpins.
Yep. No fooling.
Oh, man. I haven't laughed that hard in a long time. Oh, that's a good one.
All right. We have been going for almost 2 hours. Your turn. You close us out. What do you want to use? They can be on your list or something you just thought of or whatever.
Okay, I'm going to make you choose between because one of them is probably the more interesting and eclectic, but you might have heard it. It's been the end credits to several horror films over the years, or the other one. So the first one is Here Comes the Boogeyman. Have you heard that one?
Yes. Okay. I like that one. You know why? Because it's Fortean.
It is. It's so great.
And also I know that last week I was listening to his recording of Teddy Bear's Picnic, because that is actually a frightening song.
Oh, it's a horrifying song. So creepy.
Yeah.
So that or The Worst Beer That I've Ever Had, either one, by Buster Poindexter.
I think I gotta go with Boogeyman.
Okay, that's fine by me. I haven't heard in a while, so that's great.
Okay, so let me find it.
It seems like a very fitting way to close the evening.
Yes. Okay, here we go. This is Henry Hall with Here Comes the Boogeyman.
Children, have you ever met the boogeyman before? No, of course you haven't, for you're much too good, I'm sure. Don't you be afraid of him if he should visit you. He's a great big coward, so I'll tell you what to do. Hush, 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 here comes the boogeyman. Don't let him come too close to you, he'll catch you if he can. Just pretend that you're a crocodile, and you will find that boogeyman will run away a mile. Say shoo shoo and stick him with a pin. Boogeyman will very nearly jump out of his skin. Say buzz buzz, just like the wasp that stings. Boogeyman will think you are an elephant with wings. Hush, 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 here comes the boogeyman. Tell him you've got soldiers in your bed, for he will never guess that they are only made of lead. Say hush, hush, he'll think that you're asleep. If you make a lovely snore, away he'll softly creep. Sing this tune, you children, one and all. Boogeyman will run away, he'll think it's Henry Hall.
Meta.
Shadows of the evening creep across the sky, and your mommy comes upstairs to sing a lullaby. Tell her that the boogeyman no longer frightens you. Uncle Henry's very kindly told you what to do. Hush, 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 here comes the boogeyman. Don't let him come too close to you, he'll catch you if he can. Just pretend your teddy bear's a dog. Then shout out, fetch him, Teddy, and he'll hop off like a frog. Pretend that you're a cat. He'll think you may scratch, and that will make him fall down flat. Just pretend he isn't really there. You will find that boogeyman will finish in thin air. Here's one way to catch him without fail. Just keep a little salt with you.
Amazing.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's got this wonderful, this little bit sinister, playful sort of vibe. It's great.
Yeah, it's a theme that has been taken and run with and turned into many horror movies. And of course, it scared us when we were kids and all that. I didn't even know that was a theme or an idea before, you know, I was a kid. And that song's from the 30s, I think. 1930.
Yeah, it's really old.
Yeah, I guess that closes it out. Unless you got another one you want to go out on as we finish up. I don't think I really have anything left here.
I think that the hush hush hush, here comes the boogeyman is a great one to end on.
Okay, then I will just put on something that's not really silly or anything like that for the outro. Of the show, and thank you so much, Joshua, for coming on and introducing us to some new, incredible, weird, and often beautiful stuff.
an absolute pleasure, Greg. This is a real highlight for me.
And it's the only time you're ever going to be interviewed where they don't have you talking about UFO stuff. Although I guess we did it.
I know. For so long, I was like, I want to talk about UFOs. And I'm like, let's just talk about weird music. Let's talk about something else. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again. And I will talk to you very soon.
Sounds great. Take care, Greg. Have a great week.
You too. And let's see. What should I play? I'm not going to upstage Josh by playing something that's off the reservation here. oh, you know what? I'm turning into an old person.
Of course, I could just have this conversation with you instead of...
Yes, I guess you could. I'm typing in the...
Narrating.
You know, I was going to say, I'm turning into an old person. I'm not going to play this. I'll play something else, but... I just discovered the Brian Wilson Smile album, and everybody I know has been talking about it for my entire life. You know what I'm talking about?
You actually broke up a lot, so I just waited until you were quiet, and I said, great.
Oh, the Beach Boys album, they never finished because everybody thought it was too experimental. And then finally in 2004, he performed it live on stage with a huge band.
No, I don't know about this at all.
Oh, well, if you don't like the Brian Wilson sound, I guess you wouldn't, but I grew up in California, so it was kind of background. You never really think about it too much. It's just like, oh yeah, it's Beach Boys again. But then, and then people I know that are from out of state are just like, you know, why haven't you listened to this album yet? So I watched a documentary on it yesterday and I was in tears at the end. I'll probably play bits and pieces of it here and there. You know, the Prison S9 Qzall, everybody I've played that for loves it.
Oh yeah, that was a home run. I'm really proud of that one.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else ever in the history of meeting Joshua Cutchin, that one song that he hit me to is, apart from the fact that he's a great writer and has a cool book and more on the way and is a great guy, just for the very fact that he exposed me to that song. I mean, it makes life worth it. You know,
this song changed the world.
It did change my world. The other thing that I got obsessed with is if you grow up with watching Charlie Brown cartoons, which I know you did,
uh-huh.
You know that throughout all the Charlie Brown cartoons, all you hear is the music is always Vince Guaraldi.
Right, right.
So when you hear Vince Guaraldi, when you hear Charlie Brown, it's like you expect to hear that music. But people don't realize and, you know, don't really think about it that he was an accomplished jazz musician on top of all this. And I played this, I think, a couple of weeks ago on the show. But you first hear this and you go, is that what I think it is? And it's not the Linus and Lucy theme that everybody knows, but it's, you know, something that's – it's a song that it's played during the programs.
Yeah, it's got some of his he's using the same vocabulary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the Peppermint Patty theme, and it's done by this large orchestra. And every time I hear it, I get – it's a transporting experience for me. And it wouldn't be unless I associated it with my childhood and watching Charlie Brown specials.
Well, that's great. I need to hear this.
Okay, so I got to unplug you off here. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to see if the microphone on my computer can pick this up. It's the Peppermint Patty theme done by Vince Guaraldi with a live on stage with a large orchestra. Here we go.
Thank you.
Well, that's pretty incredible. Josh is still there, I think, actually. Still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That was everything about that is just is just great. And that's a live recording.
Yeah.
Do you know when that was, like, what the event was, or was it a—
No idea. I guess I could find out.
That's fantastic. I was just wondering if it was like a one-off or if he did a tour or what.
I don't know what that's from. I found it on YouTube. I was just like, what else has Vince Guaraldi done? And I just started searching, and he's got, you know, Freeform, you know, jazz stuff. He's got— I'm not normally a, you know, jazz after 1950 person.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a gateway drug in hearing it in all the Peanuts cartoons. So, but he does standards, and he does, like you said, the guy has chops. The guy can play. And he wrote all the music, did all the arrangements and everything to do that orchestral version of Peppermint Patty. And he, you know, obviously composed all the music for the Peanuts cartoons. He also— and I will end with this, and then we will stop, because now it's been like two hours and 10 minutes. But this Linus and Lucy orchestral version, there's like a 3-minute intro. I will skip most of the 3-minute intro, which is— you can find this also on Facebook. But here, let me plug this in, and Josh will disappear off the board here. Anyway, so this is— there's a 3-minute intro on Linus and Lucy, but I'll just go to the part that everybody knows, because it's amazing, and it goes through a couple of movements too. Thanks again, Josh. Here's this section of Linus and Lucy live. Yeah, there's a little bit of the intro. And the piano just pops in. I hope you enjoyed that, Josh.
Yeah, that was great. That was awesome. I mean, it's such a good arrangement and such like awesome use of dissonance, and like I said, there's this little theme and variation section in the middle where you got the 6/8 thing going. It's I would love to know who did that arrangement, because that's fantastic too. In addition to Guaraldi's playing.
Vince Guaraldi did the arrangement, I believe.
He did the arrangement too. Nice. That's awesome.
Well, that's from the album Vince Guaraldi, the Charlie Brown Suite and Other Favorites.
That is great.
So yeah, I guess people could say, well, you just listen to Charlie Brown stuff. It's like, but taking something that you know, the original composer and musician and music and jazz musician, and seeing what he does with it away from what you're familiarity with makes it, you know, that much more amazing, at least to me. And it's like I said, I mean, it's a gateway. I want to listen to more of his stuff, and I've been sort of searching around online for it.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And it doesn't make you stop listening to the Ramones or the Beatles or B-52s or the Fibonacci's or Devo or anything else. This is just another thing that makes me very happy.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing a lot of people don't realize. It's like not everything has to be – I mean, tonight we played a song with Jimmy Buffett and the Muppets. Like not everything has to be – not everything has to be the best, most innovative thing ever. You know, sometimes things can just be enjoyable, and, you know, as long as you don't become – as long as you don't drown in it, nostalgia is not a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Josh, like I said before, thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon, on or off the air, probably both.
Absolute pleasure as always, Greg. Thanks so much for a wonderful Sunday morning.
Yes, it's morning where you are, Josh, morning, on the East Coast. Yeah.
All right, thanks so much, Greg. Have a great week, buddy.
You too.
All right, take care.
You too. Talk to you later. You know what? In honor of Josh being on, I'll play that Prison Hall as an uncusal again, because that's another song I'm obsessed with at the moment. And we will see you in a couple weeks, and see you on the Facebook and on the It Defies Language, which I'll also try and post. Also, yes, if you've read the book, if you've read It Defies Language and you like it, even if you don't like it, but put up a review, please, at Amazon or Lulu. Because I believe it helps with the sales. And we'll see you soon.
Prison call in answer 9-2-0.
You're the cold maze, say one. Prison call in answer 9-2-0. All right.
When I stay in the shoes, now I'll hold me the same. Then a whole red man begin to call the boss dying. We get a cold, baby, so stay at the Joe. When I stay in the shoes, now I'll hold me the same. Then a whole red man begin to call the boss dying. Well, it's the same, man, should have caught me a sting. You know, for trouble, now for Jersey, God, believe it's a sham. You'd have come and not choose, not right, but not so hope, hope, but just getting along the cover, no time. Stand, light his shoes, go, my man. You've been trusting the man called Dovray, the girls. Oh, for something. To land a chisel on the top, all had a good time. Left face to go. We've been seeing in the sand, and the shoes have come up in. There's a two of the cars, the number four, one of the grind to state. Aye, aye, smile, chance, let. Ain't a kill, shut door, and reels up. Aye. a man to say one precinct calling this and I choose all right. You know, it's you not feel as you can on them and don't. There's people that are still out big, yo. There's people that I still have to dig me out.